All right, we got Spain and Saudi Arabia kicking off today's World Cup games. Belgium, Iran, Uruguay, Cape Verde. Is it Verde or Verde? Are we sure on this, just like Verde. We with Flo? Yeah, Verde, okay.
In Spanish, I've heard people say Verde.
Yeah, and that's what I thought. I've heard people say Verde, and I'm like, that's not right. Listen, if you have a last name that sounds like a sneeze, you care about pronunciations. So I just overly care. Japan
Nick
won.
Ahu.
Yeah, you know, yeah, no, you're close, but that's not it. Nice try, though. I wish when I was younger I just told people, Ashew, cashew, it rhymes. It would have made my life way easier, but the sneeze joke will always be there. But I lean into it. Got to lean into it. We talked to Chris Miles, Zabe and I did on Friday, and you know, there's so much in terms of the movement and the rumors in lying season when it comes to where the Wizards are going to go. We're starting to see a lot more about Darren Peterson now being truly mentioned as potentially the number one overall pick for the Wizards. Here was our conversation with Chris Miles.
Chris Miles, NBA TV. Look, dude, you and I have had conversations before about this Wizards team, where it's going. Trae Young, the future, all of that. So I will be honest with you. I was surprised that the opt-out happened. Kind of thought he was going to play in that contract year and then look to maybe boost things next year for a bigger deal. Were you surprised that Trae Young opted out and that we're in this current situation right now?
I was not surprised because it seems as if that's become standard business, right? For guys who are all-stars, who have been all-stars, all-NBA caliber players, or guys who view themselves in that way, right? Like, because Trae Young hasn't been that for a few years now, but that's how he views himself. That's what the salaries suggest that he is, okay? Now, what we saw this with Jimmy Butler, too. I'm not going anywhere when he wanted to be traded for Miami unless there was an extension. Well, first you have to opt out to get that extension in most cases, right? So when you have a player option, you got to opt out. And why they always want the years instead of playing that last year on just the player option, what if they get hurt? Then it's all downhill, you know, financially from there. Just look at DeMarcus Cousins. He's kind of the guy that the agents point to and say, hey, remember DeMarcus Cousins didn't take that money from New Orleans, and then he tore his Achilles, never got that money back, right? Isaiah Thomas from the Boston Celtics never got his big payday after the hip injury, so all the agents, all the business people, they say, get the years, even if you take, you know, less per year.
Right.
So, for instance, with Trae Young, you said the player option was 48. I think a fair market value, if I'm the Wizards, at most, I go 3 years, 120, right? So that's 40 a year. And if he doesn't like it, I'm like, that's it. That's all I got for you.
Yeah, you make a good point about the Cousins being the one extreme. The other extreme I saw, Chris, was, Trae Young might be about to Dennis Schroeder himself. Can you tell people what Dennis Schroeder ran himself into or out of?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of people like that, right? I want to say, was it Reggie Jackson was one of them? Was it Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? It's guys that, like, they have the four, you know, back then it was like 4 years, $80 million on a table. You walk away from that, and then you're getting like 10 or 12 a year. I don't think Trae Young's in that predicament because if you kind of look around the league, they're desperate teams. I'll give you an example. Sacramento Kings, right? If you're the Kings and you're like, all right, we're not going to get anybody else. Let's get DeRozan and LaVine out of here. Throw that money at Trae Young. Chicago Bulls. Hey, who do we have on this roster? How do we sell tickets? So I do think that there are teams that we may not view it as like, oh, yeah, they're going to sign Trae Young. But when we start to get into the summer, then absolutely I could see them offering Trae Young, you know, more than even 40 a year just because you got to sell tickets. It's a business. You got to reach the floor, all of those things.
Schroeder had a four-year, $84 million extension on the table from the Lakers. And he said, you know what? No thanks. The market dried up quickly. He settled for a one-year, $6 million deal with the Celtics. He said afterwards, he said that his agent gave him bad advice. He fired his agent. The agent said you should turn down that money. I understand how you get these things can be fickle. So what would a reasonable number be for Trae Young on, say, a four-year extension? If you're the Wizards, like, what would the Wizards say, okay, we can do that? I want that number from you.
So So for me, you know, I said it just a second ago. My number, if I'm the Wizards, again, this is not with intel. I always say there's a difference when I've spoken to people, and I make sure I say that significantly, right?
Right.
This is me looking at the market saying, if I'm the Wizards, looking at the young players they have coming up, look, man, 40 a year is as the most I'm going. Truthfully, I would say 3 years, 90 million. I'm not doing more than 3 years. 90 is what I would say. Maybe a player option. And then, okay, about 3 years, 120. It's one of those two for me if I'm the Wizards, because you don't want to handicap yourself financially,
right,
for Trae Young. I just don't think this team should do that. And then you got to look at guys coming up. Who do you want to re-sign? Who do you want to, you know, pay when their contract's up? And so I think the three-year mark is good, because then you can make decisions on Trey Johnson or, you know, who you're drafting this year, whether it's Darren or AJ, you're going to pay them, right? I think the three-year mark keeps you with this, you know, these rookies you have now under the rookie scale contract before that kicks in.
So we're starting to see, Chris, Darren Peterson and number one overall pick and Wizards gaining a lot of steam. Behind the scenes, it's been a conversation for a while. Publicly, it's been all AJ DeBonsa. I'm seeing some mock drafts now for the first time, taking the time and maybe having the guts to actually put Darren Peterson number one overall. Does this Trae Young situation potentially change any decisions the Wizards might make in the draft? Are we still up in the air with maybe where they go? How do you see that playing out? And did this make any difference whatsoever in their eyes? And again, I know some of this might be speculation, but, you know, this was something that then did come down, and now we're suddenly hearing a little more of like, hey, maybe it might be Darren Peterson number one overall.
I think like anything else in life, you realize when you're having a moment or when you have momentum. And I think for the Wizards, when they got that number one overall pick, they realized, hold on, we got to do our homework. We got to get this right. And we can really shift our culture, our talent. We got a lot of pieces in place already. So to answer your question, I think when they got that number one overall pick, that's really where it shifted. Because if I'm the Wizards, I can take or leave Trae Young now. I mean, you know, I live in Atlanta. I think Trae Young's a tremendous talent. I watched him play probably more than anyone else. I talked to his dad, right? Like, shake his hand. I can have a conversation with him whenever. But again, I can take or leave Trae Young after I got that number one overall pick. And for me, I'm drafting Darren Peterson, and I'm thinking, okay, can Trae play with Darren? Do we still bring Trae Johnson off the bench? Can Darren play a lead guard position his rookie year? Or would he need a couple of years playing with a true point guard like Trae Young? Because we saw Darren playing off the ball. And if you draft AJ DeBanza, then you obviously want to have your guard depth, because if you let Trae Young walk and you draft AJ DeBanza, then you actually need to go get some guards to play with your tremendous front court.
You know, is Darren Peterson a one in the NBA? Because that's been a lot of the conversation, right, is that he played out of position at Kansas, but can you see Darren Peterson being a one, or is he more of a combo guard? Like, what does that position look like for him at the next level?
You know, I think he's a lead guard, and there's the difference between a point guard. He's not a point guard. Trae Young has always been a point guard. There's a kid coming up now that reminds me of Trae Young. You'll know him in a few years. His name's Kaden Daughtry. Like, I'm like, oh, that kid's a point guard. Or Beckham Black, right? Like, he's the kid that you'll know in a year or two. Those are true point guards. Darren Peterson is more in the vein of, and I'm not saying he plays like Kyrie Irving, but if you think, okay, he's the guy bringing a ball up the court, but you're looking for him to score, right? Like, you want him ending the possession one way or the other. But if you have a point guard, I think he can play next to the point guard. If you have a scoring guard, he can play next to the guard. So I like him with Trae Young or Trae Johnson. And I think that's what makes Darren Peterson so dynamic, is he can guard both guard positions because of his size and his ability. But he can also shoot off the ball, and he can create with the ball in his hands. He's just a dynamic offensive juggernaut.
All right, on the Peterson front, have the opt-outs and the can't-goes from his brief stay at Kansas been adequately addressed by those in the league, the media? Has that had some closure leading up to next week?
Well, I think it had closure in about March or April. From my understanding, right? So When it initially was happening, I started to ask former players first about it, right? Like, hey, what do you take on this? And Chris, once he gets in, they're going to do all those tests. They're going to figure out exactly what's wrong with him. And that the NBA team's not concerned with that. And that was the first person that I heard, like, he say that to me directly when all the noise was about the cramps. I think it was right after he missed the Arizona game. I think that's when GA said that. And then it would have been the end of March, early April. I have to look at the dates, but the first EYBL session in Cartersville, Georgia, I got to talk to some scouts and some guys from some front offices and have real conversations with them. And it was, our medical staff will handle that. Not even on the radar. Like, not concerned with that at all. And I think that's what surprises people when a draft comes, because a lot of these people, they put out these mock drafts and they don't have these conversations. So it's kind of like I said 10 or 11 days ago, I was making those same phone calls, and all I was hearing was, the Wizards called me about Darren Peterson. The Wizards called me about Darren Peterson. That was the smoke, and now you see the fire, right? Yeah. And this is what it is. Like, the Wizards have been definitively doing all of these things. And now I think there was a report about his workouts and they've done the due diligence. And obviously all of that stuff came back clean. So no, I don't think I think that's been put to the side. And people that comment on whether or not he loves basketball are people who've never talked to him. I get that. It's like people that they hear one person yelling on TV and then they take that as their take. If you talk to him, you realize all he actually cares about is basketball. And he's kind of like Trey Johnson, where you're like, do you do anything else? He's like, I play basketball. Like, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's like Durant. Durant doesn't have hobbies. The hobby is basketball. Don't blame him. For the record.
If you're in the DMV and you want to see Kevin Durant, just go to a gym.
He'll be there. Yeah. Right. He's the tall guy that shoots threes like crazy. For the sake of whatever, I'm on Polymarket. On February 8th, what do you think the Peterson-DeBanta trading market was for being the number one pick?
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. It was Peterson 75%.
Wow.
To DeBanta 20. You then follow the lines, and they crossed right around late February.
Arizona game.
Yes.
Yeah. Arizona game.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, and I'm going to say this to you. let me really explain this to people, right? The first time I walked into a gym, Darren Peterson was between his sophomore year, this time of year, before his junior year in high school, okay? And Sam Mitchell, you know him, NBA coach of the year. Mm-hmm. He's coaching Darren to be a point guard, by the way, just the way he coached John Morant at that age. And he's like, hey, come to the gym and tell me what you think. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this kid's highly ranked. But he was like sixth or seventh in the class. When the workout was over, whatever, and, you know, Darren walks away, calls Sam the next day. He's like, so what you think? And I'm like, he's like Dwayne Wade with a three-point shot. That was my first impression. Okay? And I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch him play some more. And the first time he played against A.J. DeBanta, it's not the game that everybody points to, the 60 and the 50, when they both went bonkers in that way. It was a closer game. The final score was like 66 to 64. And I said, I've never seen a high school player make all the right decisions on both ends of the floor the way I just saw this kid do this. It's just a different understanding of the game, and you know it when you see it, right? And that's what he brings to the table. And he did it. You can watch the Texas Tech game in college. Like, no one points to that. It was the first time he started finishing games at Kansas, and he finished Texas Tech. And then he finished the season. I'm like, we're saying how much he wasn't available, but he finished the year. And he was incredible in the clutch. And he's one of the most clutch players I've ever seen at that age.
So, Chris, here's what I'm trying to figure out. Because we obviously hear a lot of the narrative around A.J. DeBanta. And then, you know, again, some stuff people will just repeat. They hear it and it's just rinse and repeat. And it's not actually coming from anywhere. The phrase I hear a lot is, there's more risk around Darren Peterson. We've gotten clean medicals. What? And again, like, I know you don't feel this way. At least I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I feel like you don't feel this way. Like, is there anything that's being said at this point that is a risk when it comes to Darren Peterson? Because I can't really figure it out. If we've cleared the way from the cramping and the medicals are good and all that, what is a risk at this point for this kid other than it's just maybe you like DeBanta more than you like Peterson?
Yeah, the risk is you get this wrong and your franchise watches someone else become, you know, one of the greater players of the generation. Mm. Because it feels like one of these three kids, and if not someone else that we're not even talking about, because you know how that works. I mean, Halliburton, no one was screaming his name before that draft. Donovan Mitchell, no one was screaming his name before the 2017 draft. We were busy talking about Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball. Those are the two guys that people called me about, right? Like, that's what I was going on shows. Those are the guys I was talking about. We weren't talking about Donovan Mitchell. That's the other thing. What you're afraid of is getting this wrong in that way. And I say Markelle because you know I was the biggest pom-pom waving guy of his fan club. Started watching him as a sophomore at DeMatha, right?
Yes.
So people are like, Chris, you told us Markelle was this. I'm like, he messed up his shoulder, right? Like, that's what happened with the kid. I couldn't predict that was going to happen. And I think that's what people are a little afraid of here. Now, with AJ, he's also a physical specimen. I mean, he stands at 6'10", with broad shoulders. He plays above the rim. He has a good mid-range jumper and a decent enough three-point shot that you think this guy's going to be incredible when he fully blossoms. And if it wasn't for Darren Peterson, I would be just screaming the praises for number one for Cam Boozer, right? Or for A.J. DeBanta. But I do think when it comes to feel for the game in the game situations, Darren Peterson has proven time and time again he's got a different knack on a different level. But those two other guys are certainly worth the number one overall pick in this draft and in any draft.
All right, looking forward to it. The suits will be outrageous. The green room drama will be fantastic. It's the right of summer. The NBA draft is coming up, and the Wizards are sitting at 1-1. Chris, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, my friends.
All right, Chris. Good stuff from Chris. And listen, we're going to have a lot more out in the last minute, and it's going to try to push it one way or the other. I had somebody tweet me and was like, no, they've already announced they're taking DeBanta. I'm like, what are you talking about? The source was like Polymarket. And I'm like, yeah, Zabe talked about Polymarket there, but it's like that's different than it actually being, you know, it actually being the pick and an announcement. Like, they're not doing that yet. They are still having this conversation. Again, I do think that the favorite is still DeBanta, not just from a betting perspective or anything, but just in general. But that does not mean that we still don't have Peterson very firmly in this conversation. Speaking of predicting, we have a German economist that has correctly predicted the last three World Cup champions. Who he predicts for this World Cup, who that is, maybe we can figure out what the formula is, and we can apply it to who's going to go number one overall in the NBA draft. Nick Cashew on The Fan. Good God, Spain is up 3-0 on Saudi Arabia in the 26th minute. Anybody that watched Ted Lasso knows this scene, too. Great scene in Ted Lasso. Now, this song, I remember what it was from, Wes. The actual song. If you watch Ted Lasso, this was in an episode. So there's this German economist and mathematician. We're going to go with Joachim Clement. He's correctly predicted the last three World Cup champions. Germany in 14, France in 2018, and Argentina in 2022. What's that, Wes?
He says it in the video. The first country he says is who he predicted. So
okay.
We'll hear it here.
Okay. Who he predicted in the past, you're saying?
No, who he predicted for this World Cup is in this video.
Okay, cool.
So we'll get to hear it.
So he's got the question we had for a while was, does he actually say who it is? Well, I did look up odds in case you're wondering, and Spain is off the board, obviously, now, being up 3-0 on Saudi Arabia.
26 minutes in, just FYI.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the 27th minute now. It just crossed over, and Spain is up big. So there's a reason why, obviously, they're off the board for that. But if you'd like to continue to follow this German economist and mathematician's formula, here's who he predicts after getting the last three right. Here's who he predicts is going to win this World Cup.
I think I seemed to have a death wish. After getting it right three times in a row, I picked a team that is considered to be not amongst the favorites this time around. Netherlands is one of those countries that persistently performs above the batting average.
The football, the world of soccer for our American viewers. Tell me about it.
Yes. So what I do is I use an economic model that uses economic variables to try to predict which teams are likely to win. And that model simply rests on four factors. First of all, population. If you have more people in your country, you have a bigger talent pool to tap into. The second one is climate. You need to be able to play soccer year-round. If it's too hot, too cold, you can't play it, and that gives you a natural disadvantage. The third one is being wealthy enough to have the infrastructure to develop talent. It's not just enough to have a big talent pool. You also have to have the schools, the training grounds, etc., to develop them into world-class players. And then the fourth one is the current FIFA world ranking, just to get an idea which teams have a particularly good generation of players right now.
What are the teams that are more so catching your eye, at least?
I think there are obviously the usual suspects. There are teams that are soccer powerhouses like Brazil, like Argentina, like Germany, France, Spain in Europe. They're always at or near the top. But then there are teams that are constant outperformers, even though they shouldn't be as good as they really are. And one of them is the Netherlands. Arguably, they've never won the World Cup so far. But for being a small country, they have been in three World Cup finals already. And that really speaks for the culture and the process they have in place in developing talent. I think they have a team that doesn't have real stars, like Messi for Argentina. But they have a team that is very, very level in the performance of every one of the players in the team. So there's no real weak spot. The second thing is, they have a really good defense. And in soccer, more so than in most other sports, the saying that offense wins matches, defense wins tournaments, that actually is true in soccer in particular.
So the Netherlands was his prediction after getting the last three World Cup winners right with his formula. If you would find any interest, FanDuel's got him at 15-1. I'm not going to lie to you, Wes. I put a little dabble on just a little bit.
Let's go.
After that. Just, you know what? Just because.
Why not?
At 15-1, dude, bet $5, win 75 even, if that's whatever you want to put in there. If you put it, bet a dollar, win 15. You know? Have a little fun with it. If it's the Netherlands, there's solid value there. And, you know, Spain right now looks pretty good, but it's up against Saudi Arabia. They're up 3-0. 3-0. By the way, I said 3-0 earlier, Wes. Very bad of me.
3-0.
I should be saying nil. They're in the 31st minute, but they scored the first three goals in the first 26 minutes of this game. So kind of looks like a whooping right there. But, yeah, look, he got the last three right, which tells me he'll probably get this wrong, and that's going to be a wasted bet for me. But it was just a sprinkle. Germany in 2014, France in 2018, and Argentina in 2022. So he's gotten his last three right. But, again, once this stuff gets really big and becomes a, you know, gets out there and everybody's talking about it, that's when it always falls.
Yeah,
and
so
that's
when
it loses.
So he has this Netherlands team beating Spain in the semifinals and then Portugal in the final. I'm not going to completely agree with that, but I can see the Netherlands winning.
Why don't you agree with it?
I just think Portugal is, they're getting a little older, which is a result of Ronaldo being 41 as well, being very selfish. On the pitch.
So, selfish as a player on the pitch, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They were comparing Messi and Ronaldo and also Crosby and Ovi. And Messi is a player who makes everyone around him better. And Ronaldo is he's a scorer. And they're kind of comparing that with Crosby and Ovi at this age, with Ovi just kind of being a scorer now, suffering on defense.
Interesting. Well, both those guys playing at 38 and what, 41, I think? What is
38,
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah, 41 Ronaldo, 38 Messi.
So, got to give him credit. That is longevity right there, that's for sure. But, all right, Netherlands 15-1, according to the German economist and mathematician. Economist, jeez. my brain's fried a little bit here, but there you go. So that's what we got. I've dabbled. If you wanna tail it all, I think let's get in, and now we're rooting for the Netherlands. If not the U.S., then the Netherlands. Oh yeah, I noticed Wes. He did not talk about the U.S. So You're mad at Tim Howard, but Tim Howard might be right. Impossible.
Hey, I never said that. You asked me who I thought was going to win. I said England.
You did. That's true. You did. England, I think, has the third shortest odds. Yeah, they do.
I think I'm going to put money on England.
I
love how Jude Bellingham has played. That's why I played that Hey Jude song, by the way, because they were singing it when England won, and Jude Bellingham, he got teary-eyed because they were singing his name.
Well, it was an episode of Ted Lasso. Yeah. They had somebody out on the street playing it, too. If you watch the show, you know the episode. Big Ted Lasso fan here, so can't wait for that fourth season. It was not supposed to happen. It did. I think that comes out in August, which is smart. Ride that momentum of the World Cup and get in on that. All right, Spain still up 3-0 on Saudi Arabia. Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. Spain still up 3-0 in the 38th minute over Saudi Arabia. They're pummeling them right now. 14 shots to just one for Saudi Arabia. It's brutal. Spain with the second shortest odds to win this World Cup, too. Though we found out it's the Netherlands, according to the German mathematician that has the formula that's predicted the last three. Wes, I forgot that I bet 22 or more shots for Spain in this game. I'm feeling pretty good.
What do they have?
They're at 15 right now already.
Yeah, well, they're about to have another one. They're controlling the ball. I want to see that they show on Fox the control percentage. It seems like it's 70-plus percent for Spain right now.
I mean, it is like Saudi Arabia's just got...
Yeah,
there's nothing for them right now. I mean, attempts outside the box, attempts inside the box, 1-0. They just have zeros across all their team stats. You don't have to know a lot of soccer to know that when you've been outshot 15-1, you're probably going to lose. So, attempts inside the box, 6 for Spain, 0 for Saudi Arabia. And listen, goal differential matters in this game, right? Because that's part of what helps, you know, get to the knockout round and helps you with the standings and all that. So they're right now Spain up 3-0 on Saudi Arabia. I said nothing earlier.
In Spain, they didn't score the last time out when they played Cape Verde. We were talking about that goalie a couple of days ago, if you remember that.
Yes,
goalie. Yeah, so
got 8 million followers, so yeah. Just from
all women.
That save. Good for him. Good for him. I'm a big fan, too, of all these videos of people experiencing the U.S. for the first time. So, I tried barbecue for the first time. Oh, endless chips and salsa.
Bottomless soda.
It's just this. I saw one. People were fascinated by the yellow school buses. They were like, just like in the movies. I didn't realize that's kind of just like a U.S. thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yellow school buses. The BBC, though, did go a little far. So they used a backdrop on part of the studio show for the BBC for the World Cup. And the backdrop was Houston. The issue is they've added mountains to part of the backdrop. Houston doesn't have mountains.
So I lived in Houston.
Oh, right. I figured this would be right up your alley.
Yeah, mountains, no. I don't remember seeing one.
Not a thing. None. Now, the best part is the Houston Dynamo, the MLS team there, redid a shot of their stadium with giant mountains in the background. Very cartoonish. It's very funny. The Rockets did the same thing. Greetings from Houston. It's a postcard with the skyline of Houston and massive, they call it the Houston Alps. So everybody's having fun on social media with it. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I would know the landscape of cities in lots of other countries, especially in Europe or whatever. But I do kind of feel like you should make sure that you've got something accurate down if you're going to make it the backdrop on your set and you have a picture of the city of Houston and the skyline, which is very cool. But you have to add the mountains. Like, it doesn't exist. If they don't exist at all. As a person that has lived in Houston, Wes, are you insulted by this? Did the BBC get it outraged? Are you outraged?
No, I mean, it has a great city skyline. I'm not outraged by the Alps. I mean, Texas is known for its plains. I'm so confused.
Well, but again, so here's the one thing I'll say, and I've noticed this too in a lot of these videos, and I've seen this in the past too, of people that have, you know, been to the U.S. for the first time and they talk about it. The one thing I've heard described, which I think is very accurate, this guy was from somewhere in England, I can't remember where, but he talked about how like, I get why Americans don't leave the country a lot, because you have so many different landscapes and different views and different looking, just... I guess every state looks different in some ways in the U.S. You get a little of everything. So it's hard to keep track of, like, well, Texas is flat, but, you know, the mountains are in Colorado. Like, to us, it's second nature. But I wouldn't be able to tell you what the mountains of, like, specific areas of Scotland would look like versus where England or Spain. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell you, like, that's not an accurate portraying of it. So I think more than anything, it's just funny. But at the same time, somebody created this. So who created it and thought that we're going to add something? Because if you were like, if you looked up in your database for a backdrop on a set and looked up Houston, Texas, USA, you're not going to find mountains in that picture. So somebody went in and had the audacity to just say, let's add mountains to this and see if anybody notices.
It's just shocking coming from the BBC. That's one of the, it's like the biggest broadcast network in the world.
Right.
And they're missing... I mean, it's just poor. It's I don't know what poor production, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it's definitely poor production. There's no question that that was not a good idea to do.
I'm looking. I actually just looked up Houston, Texas, just to see what they do show. It's some water. I mean, it's a swamp. That's Bayou City.
Right.
That's the nickname of Houston. There's no mountains, but
there's no mountains in the bayou.
Now I'm kind of getting offended.
You know what? You should be offended.
The more we talk about it.
I like this. So who has offended you more today, Tim Howard or the BBC?
Tim Howard.
Okay.
I can't. Here's the thing. The BBC, they're out in London. I've been to their headquarters. Sick building. I respect them. Tim Howard, you play for the team. Show more respect.
Show more respect. Don't be a grumpy old head that's mad that the team is successful.
Okay, Unc.
I kind of like this bit from you. This is good. This is the most fired up you've been about something in a long time. Big fan of this.
Ohio State hasn't played in a while.
Well, that's the thing. There's not a lot for you. You're mostly just trolling with Ohio State and the music you play or whatever. You've just been a troll the last couple of days we've worked together. So I'm really happy that this is you fired up a little bit more about Tim Howard. So I kind of feel like, you know, we found a way to twist the knife with you if I want to get you, you know, just wind you up at all.
Yeah,
mention Tim Howard.
Yeah, give me a Tim Howard jersey. I'll burn it in the office.
There you go. That's what I like to see. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. You know, if you're not a fan of the way sports is evolving and how you watch it, it's going to just get more annoying. Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. So YouTube's dabbling right now, but then we thought they were going to have that Australia game to start the season. They're not. It's Netflix, and now apparently that they were the front runners for a 5-game NFL package this season. John Orrand said that now that's off the table, at least at this point. One of his sources says that he was told it's, quote, such a laborious process pitching YouTube because they're genuinely trying to figure out if they want to be in the live rights game or not. The NFL is in a weird spot because you're starting to get to the point where you're pricing yourself out with the traditional networks you're working with, the NBC, CBS, Fox, all those. Although Fox just, not to get too in the weeds, you might not care about it, but Fox just bought Roku. That includes Tubi. So Fox is about to evolve their business model. Good for them. But, you know, it's getting to the point where it's the NFL wants to renegotiate with NBC over Sunday Night Football, and Sunday Night Football is costing them $1 billion. But NBC's paying the NBA $1.2 billion for their NBA package. It's more games. The NFL doesn't matter. The NBA is getting more money than the NFL, so now they want more money. And you're going to get to a point where the NFL is kind of stuck in this middle ground because they're going to get too expensive for these traditional media networks. But the big tech companies that want to have live events aren't going to be willing to just necessarily pay for everything unless it's within their range, where it's like they don't need the NFL. YouTube doesn't need the NFL. Netflix doesn't need the NFL. They're doing just fine without them. Does it benefit them to get involved in live events? Yeah, of course it does. Because they still, like, from a Netflix perspective, right, half the time you go on there, you binge stuff, it may just be done. They want to keep people on all the time. The only thing that drives audiences to one spot, one time slot, one moment of watching all at the same time is live sports or, you know, political events, whatever. But it's live. And that's why Netflix, who for the longest time was like, yeah, we're in the binge game. They're like, actually, this sports thing is kind of a big deal. And they've started getting into baseball and the NFL, and there's going to be more down the road. There we know everybody's gone to all these platforms. Prime's involved. Apple TV's involved with some. But YouTube's interesting. Because, like, YouTube is built on people creating stuff and using their platform and They pay you sometimes depending on what you're doing and how much and all that, and everybody's using it. YouTube is the most watched platform in America, period. Like, over everything else, over Netflix. Netflix and YouTube are competing with each other, and they've surpassed everybody else. Because people watch YouTube now on their TV with the app. It's not like it's just back in the day where you'd, like, go on the website and watch funny videos. Like, we far surpassed that, as most people know. But, you know, they've got the YouTube TV. Obviously, they have YouTube TV. They've got the YouTube TV package, or the, you know, the NFL Sunday Ticket package that's with YouTube TV, but also it can be with YouTube. Like, they're kind of in that game. But it's the exclusive games that they've done. They've had some international games. We've seen it with YouTube, and we've seen them kind of go that route. They're experimenting, and they try to bring in, you know, Mr. Beast and all these guys. And, yeah, you're going to appeal to a different audience with it. I get all that, but they don't need it. The NFL's got to be careful, because you're going to get to a point where it's you're going to be stuck in this middle ground where Netflix and YouTube, at least, and maybe Prime at some point, too, because they have so many other things that have made their brands, their platforms, their content successful, they're going to look at the NFL and say, no, you actually need us. You want this kind of money? You want $2 billion a year or whatever it is just for Sunday Night Football? You want to double it? No, we're not going to pay that much. We don't need it. We have people coming on with shows all the time that cost us a lot less to build, and it's like in movies, and it's going to, like, it's going to be complicated for the NFL. And look, I get that it's overwhelming at times. It's frustrating. I mean, I live this stuff. I understand all this, and it's still frustrating in moments. Wait, which platform is on what? Where does it go here? I think the biggest thing that people have in terms of a frustration is also if you're watching more than one thing, you got to go like two screens, or you got, because if you're jumping from like Prime to Netflix or YouTube, there's a leave, wait, load it up, go in. Like, that's got to get faster. But lots of people have multiple screens now. The dual screen thing is very common. And it's, you know, it's something that is still part of, like, what people are used to. But if you're the NFL, at what point do you look and say, uh-oh, we're kind of entering this weird gray area here? Now, sure, everybody benefits from this. I mean, maybe at one point it's the NFL building out their own, just everything is on the NFL app. There's a chance of that. The NBA is already starting to build out their own, like, content team for watching local teams around the country. So maybe the NFL follows suit with that. They sold the NFL network to ESPN, and then ESPN now owns some of that, but then there's an investment in ESPN. Like, all this stuff is kind of getting all mixed together here. But live sports will always be valuable, and we're continuing to see that grow and become more and more important for everybody and for because what else do you watch live? Like, what do people tune into anymore that's like, oh, it's on at this time slot Sunday night or whatever,
politics.
I'm
going to
watch it. That's what I mean. It's sports and politics.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's it.
There's no show anymore that does that. Game of Thrones might have been the last one. I'd argue like the end of Yellowstone, but then the last season was kind of meh. So, I mean, there's not really a lot of like everybody sits and watches and live tweets this show. It was probably Game of Thrones, the original. I don't think there's anything else. And that's one of the reasons why sports is so valuable, so popular, and it's why everybody's willing to pay so much to have that, because when there is a big event, a big fight, whatever, people are going to Netflix to watch it. People are going on Prime to watch Thursday Night Football. It's all there, and then you integrate everything else you have. I mean, it's changing. The world is changing. All right, we got a weird, like, 10-minute segment after this, just for the fan. Nick Cashew. Well, you know, if you need goals, you're going to have to go out and get them in the World Cup. Spain's up 3-0 at halftime over Saudi Arabia. They scored those first three goals in like the first 26 minutes, so they are very much trying to pummel everybody in front of them. 17 shots to 2 for Saudi Arabia. So very much making a point known there, if that's the case. We did find out that according to that German statistician, though, the Netherlands are going to win the World Cup, according to his formula, over the last 3-1. Not the U.S., which has all of the love and all of the hype around them right now. And it's a great story, but there are a lot of really, really good soccer programs that are around the world that you're going to have to get through if you're the U.S. So we did kind of look at that path a little bit. Landon Donovan and Tim Howard have a podcast, Unfiltered Soccer, two with very different approaches to the question as to whether or not the U.S. can win the World Cup.
Yeah. All right, last one. Give it to me.
Daniel Walker, do you guys think the USA can win the World Cup? Can we? Yes.
No.
Has this group proven it? That they can beat a top team? No. But I'll tell you this, Tim, and I mean this. If they play the way they're playing, they can absolutely compete against any team in this World Cup.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay? Can you do it? I've said this over and over. Can you do it four times in a row? Can you do it in a round of 16, a quarter, a semi, and a final? Mm-hmm. That is where it gets really hard. But momentum gets going. You never know. Is it likely? No, it's not likely. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
Who asked the question again? Sorry, JR.
Daniel Walker.
Daniel.
Good old Daniel.
Danny Dubs. The U.S. cannot unequivocally win the World Cup. The U.S. will have to play the greatest game they've ever played three times in a row. They're going to have to beat three world soccer powerhouses in a row in the round of 16. Oh, no. Yeah, sorry, four games in a row. Atlanta, you said round of 16, quarterfinals, semifinals, yep. Finals.
Yep.
It is literally impossible for the U.S. to win the World Cup. That's gonna come across crazy. People are going to say I'm whatever. That's just.
I mean, it ruffled your feathers, didn't it, Wes?
It did.
You're not happy about this at all. But here's what I will say before you say what you have to say with this, because I know this really made you mad. Landon Donovan was a little more fair. Tim Howard, though, was honest. And whether you agree with what Tim Howard said or not, the reality here is that I find it refreshing whenever a former player is at least willing to not pull any punches versus just the simple, basic, regurgitated answers fluff that you're going to get on some of these pre- and post-game shows or podcasts. You didn't get that from him here. But you do have the path that the U.S. would go through, which maybe contradicts a little bit of what Tim Howard said.
It does. And I want to preface that this bracket is changing as it goes. So the United States has clinched their group, and Spain, as of right now, will move from their spot if they win this game. So he did say they would play three powerhouses. That's not necessarily true right now based on what could happen the rest of the way. But right now, if Ecuador would be the first game, and then they would play New Zealand, and then they would play the – so right now, actually, so they have put Spain now playing Austria instead of Uruguay.
Okay.
So that does change things for the United States, but that's three games in. So that would be the quarterfinals. And again, things will change because I think that is Spain, they're assuming that they win this game. All I'm saying that Tim Howard, as a U.S. soccer alumni, a legend who holds the record for 16 saves in a World Cup, the most of any goalie ever in the history of the world, I don't think that the way he breaks it down, saying it's not going to happen, I think he's wrong. I think the way that they've played compared to when he was on the team, he didn't experience an elite USA team, and I think he has jealousy over it.
I mean, I think it's fair to say, hey, they got more resources here now. It's probably the same way that, you know, Tom Thibodeau feels about the Knicks winning the NBA Finals after he got them to the Eastern Conference Finals and they got fired the year before. So I wouldn't fault him for feeling that way. If you think that fuels and let's see, I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. Maybe distorts his view on the team and their path. Okay, that's fair. But if he really does feel that way, here's the thing. He is right that they've got to play like the best soccer they've ever played consistently.
Which they're doing.
The rest of the way, which right now they are. But again, the odds are that they continue to play at a level of perfection that's really hard to achieve. So think about it like this. So the U.S. men's national team, that win over Australia they just had Friday, that's the first time since 1930 that the American men have won back-to-back World Cup matches. Just back-to-back. They haven't done this in almost 100 years, and it's the first time the men have won their group in 16 years. This is arguably the best team that the U.S. has had in almost 100 years. So, yes, in theory, they are already in that best soccer they can play mindset and result through the first two games. But, Wes, we're also talking multiple games with that similar style of play clicking and everything going their way on both sides, including their opponent not playing their best moving forward, because there is going to be a talent deficit as they go farther, if they get farther in the tournament.
You know how easy it is to pick the field over one team? I got asked that question several times during the college football playoff bracket. Oh, Ohio State of the field. the odds are obviously going to be against the number one team. You can, I would pick the field over England, who I think is going to win. If I'm you more possibly make money on the field than you picking one team. It's very easy to just to say U.S. are not going to win it because, yeah, because historically they've been bad and compare them to the U.S. team. They're nothing, the women's team. But to say it's impossible, the word impossible, and they have to play three powerhouses, which is, as of right now, might not be true. It's just, I wouldn't say that in a podcast and mislead the listener, especially when the team was the second team to clinch their group stage because they demolished. It's a 6-1 goal differential between goals they've scored and they've allowed one goal, Paraguay, and that was in the second half.
I think it's fair to say that there's probably a level of jealousy of where the team is now because, you know, they've got a higher level of coaching than they've probably ever had or for a significant amount of time. So I get it. I think some of that is showing through in this. Again, I don't agree with what he's saying as impossible. It's not impossible, but it's very, very highly unlikely. And there's like 15 other teams that have better odds for them to win. Again, I know that that doesn't guarantee everything, but I'm just saying if we're looking at it from the information that's given to us right now, I think Landon Donovan, who, by the way, is also very critical at times, he was a lot more realistic with his approach where it's not impossible, but it's highly unlikely.
Yeah, it's going to be super challenging.
Yes.
But to say the word impossible, and coming from Tim Howard, who has made comments over the past years, I'm not surprised that he has said this.
So who do you hate more? Because I feel like Alexi Lalas is also a villain. Is it Alexi Lalas, Tim Howard, or would they be more?
Probably Tim Howard.
Okay.
Tim Howard, the U.S. goalkeeper. Everyone loved him. I mean, he's an icon. And to say this yesterday, come on, dude. Read the room. Watch the games. Look at the crowd and the bars that are packed across the whole country. And we talked about Javier Hernandez and Zlatan saying that the U.S. could win. These are the best players in the world, the best Mexican player in the world, Javier Hernandez, back when he played, and saying that the U.S. have a chance. And this guy who used to play in the U.S. saying no, come on now.
Well, the only thing I would say is, like, don't sit there and just pander to the fans just because people are caught up in the moment. That's not his job. He should be unbiased, but that doesn't mean that, you know, again, like, if he really believes this, then he really believes it. But, oh, CJ McCollum just got a one-year extension with the Hawks. Good for him. He's got a trade kicker on top of it. Okay, so a little one-year deal for CJ McCollum after getting traded for Trae Young. So that'll, former Wizard there. Got that. What do we got, like 30 seconds left here? Okay, we're just riding this thing out as much as we can. We'll see. I mean, we're not going to get any answer from the U.S. in their third game. That's not going to mean anything. It's
weeks
just down the road.
Weeks until the
weeks.
Play.
It is. You're right. It's weeks. We're going to have to get into July before we start getting a real idea. Hey, the World Cup's long. I'd say stretch it out. I love it. Give us as much World Cup coverage as we can. Let it stretch. We're good. Wes, great stuff. Love when you're fired up, Wes. This is what I want to hear. I want to hear angry Wes sometimes because it's not Ohio State, so we got to find something else. Nick Ashew on the Fan.